Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
My God. Okay, everybody, let's just start this straight up. Welcome to the Renee Subs Tennis Podcast. You guys have been begging us to come back with a pod. Unfortunately, I am in the US, in New York, and my glorious friend Andrea Pekovic is in her home. I'm looking in the background in Darmstadt in Germany, and we just got finished watching the men's final. Oh my God. Okay, should we talk about the men first and then get into the women's? Because the women's tournament was amazing. But let's, while it's fresh on our lips and minds, let's get started with the men's final. FAA and Andre Rublev. What are your thoughts, my friend?
I was so bored and I feel so bad for them. But it's I kept texting you like, my God, let this be over. And I really feel bad for them because it's not entirely their fault. I just watched yesterday's women's final from first point to last. We'll talk about it. So I'll stick with the men. But I just want to say right off the bat that at 2-2 in the first set, I sent you a message. 2-2 in the first set. I sent you a message yesterday saying, like, this is the most incredible tennis I've ever seen. Not knowing they would continue for another 3 hours like that. So that was incredible. But okay, let's stick with the men. I'm staying disciplined. So I have to say, I called the match between Rublev and Alcaraz. And after he won that, I really thought that he could. I don't want to say I thought he would, but I really thought he could win Madrid. Because honestly, I haven't seen him play this well this year at all. I thought it was the best match of the season that he played. And yes, Alcaraz was having problems with his forearm. But still, Andre served 90% first serves in the second set. It was incredible. He was winning way over 80% first serve points. He was returning well. He was hitting the shite out of the ball and not missing. So I'm really, really glad that he won. And I've heard, I don't know if you've heard it, I've heard he had the flu. So if he had to retire today and poor Felix Auger-Aliassime wins this Masters, I don't even think it will do him any good except for the points, because he would just be piled on for the next 3 years for winning a Masters title with not actually playing any. What are your thoughts on that? That was such a weird final run.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he got the default over Sinner, and, you know, so yes, you would think that if it clearly, he, you know, didn't play Rublev or something happened with Rublev. But in the end, Auger-Aliassime looked like he was struggling in the third set with, you know, his fitness and his legs, all the things. And I just wonder sometimes, Petco, with FAA, I've said this for years and I still believe it to this day. And I think it really hurts him. He's so uptight.
He's so rigid. Uptight
when he's on the court, and he just, I think that gets to him in moments like this. I mean, and you, look, Rublev is like gesturing and not complaining, but like stressed the whole time. But I have to give him a lot of kudos, because we know what happened in Dubai, right? Yeah. This guy got defaulted out of a match and he was obviously very disappointed with himself. You know, we've heard the story that what was said, he said, was not what he said. It was misinterpreted, blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is, it didn't look good. Mm. He got defaulted. And I think from that moment, clearly he did not play well. I think he lost like first four, four yeah. first rounds in a row. Like he was yeah. obviously really upset about it. It really didn't do well. But I think it's also funny enough, I think it's actually helped him because yes. his behavior in Madrid was fantastic.
Yes.
We know how much of a psycho he is on the court because he's great off the court. I mean, he's such a character. But I actually think him getting defaulted in Dubai in the end has actually helped him because now you see him not exploding when he maybe would. And today in the third set was a perfect example because he had so many opportunities to break serve mm-hmm. and he didn't get it done and he didn't lose his shit. I mean, this is a guy that would like break a racket like every set almost, it felt like. So I think that that has helped him. And FAA just, he looked so uptight. And I just think in the end, for him to double fault on match point, bro, come on. I mean, the point was unbelievable prior. And I think, you know, taxing wise, it was probably took it out of him and his legs. But come on, you can't double fault. I mean, that's just a no. He especially on clay.
He didn't play a match in 5 days. He played yeah. three. He got a default. He got a walkover from Sinner. And then it was 3-3 against Lehechka when Lehechka had to retire. He didn't yeah. play. It's exactly what you say. I'm not giving him any reproaches. It's exactly what you say. He's so uptight. He wants it so much. He's so rigid that he makes it. I think he expends 3 times as much energy as any other player on the ATP. It's actually mesmerizing that he's achieving all these things that he is achieving because of how much energy he's letting out and just wanting it too much. I mean, that's also what makes him so good, right? That he's so disciplined. He's such a professional. He does everything right to the last single digit point of percentage, but it's too much. He's Rich Rubin, man.
But also, I mean, let's give him some credit. He beat Casper Ruud.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that was an incredible match. And I think that will for sure turn his year around. There's no question about that. To beat someone like Casper on clay, you know, when Casper's playing pretty good tennis, like that was huge. I do agree in some respects, though, Madrid is not an indicator for the French Open. It has never been an indicator for the French Open. I mean, obviously, look, Iga won. You know, you've had players win Madrid and then go and play great in Paris. Yeah. But it is a slight altitude. It helps big servers. It helps players that play with the flat ball. It helps, you know, it's not quite the same. As you know, Petco, you've played there yourself. It's a little different and it does favor big servers. So that is definitely FAA. And I think what helped him today was that they closed the roof. And yes. we know how well FAA plays indoors. It's where a lot of his major tournaments victories have come. You know, growing up in Canada, you play a lot indoors, as you do in Europe. But I think that really helped him today. And if I was Andre Rublev's coach, I'd be really pissed that they closed the roof. And I'm sure he was. But I give him a ton of credit. He's the greatest guy. He's so nice. I'm glad he's back. You know, I think he'll be back inside the top 20. But look, you know, I think the guy that deserved to probably win the tournament won the tournament.
I think so too. I want to say, I think the reason why he makes me so upset is because he's a great player. He's a specimen of an athlete. He does everything right. It's just that I think he's more concerned with doing everything right that he forgets yes. to play tennis. He works tennis. And that's why I get upset because I had a lot of similarities with him. So I can identify with him. That's why I think he gets me, you know, gets me going when I see funny. Him. It's going to do you good because I didn't. And I messed myself up with it. I also think that's why I got injured a lot and he gets injured a lot. And so does Rafa, all these players who are not that to compare myself to Rafa at all, but all these players who are like kind of anxiety driven and really work tennis and have a lot of stress, and are high strung. They can get injured easily too, I think.
No, I agree. And, you know, what did I used to tell you all the time? All the time. I'd be like, Petco, take your head off of your shoulders, leave it in the locker room and go and play, you know, and be that person that just hits and is physical and all those sort of things. And I feel like that with him. He's got such a big serve, although I do not like the pause that he has when he takes his racket back and down and he has that slight pause. It's kind of like yeah. eager. It's mm-hmm. like, just keep moving it. And because if you think about it, it's like, you know, people out there that don't really understand that maybe aren't tennis players or great servers or whatever, Like, imagine throwing a ball. Like, you go to throw it, and then you're about to throw it, and then you pause, and then you throw it. Like, the chances of you hitting the spot all the time is not as good as having the fluidity in the back swing going straight down and straight up. You know, like Serena, boom, up. So anyway, there are technical things in his game, and that's why
he does play well on indoor facilities, because there is no, you know, outside variables. Circumstances. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But honestly, to come back to Andrei Rublev, I agree with you 100%. He really, I think we talked about it on a podcast before. And, you know, it was bound to happen. Maybe the default and the disqualification was a bit harsh, but it was something was bound to happen. He had a few instances already where he kind of went overboard and people gave him a pass because he's a nice guy and everyone loves Andre, but he kind of went overboard. And I really think for the long term of his career, this might have been the best thing that happened to him, even though he might have lost 6 to 7 weeks because he was, you know, and he wants to be liked. He doesn't want to be a bad guy. So I think he really was guilt ridden for the last 6 weeks. But if he can keep up this mental strength and calm, and he's never going to be a calm guy, you still saw him gesturing and doing like opera like facial expressions so the last person in the stands would see that he's upset, but he had himself under control a lot better, and so he deservedly won Madrid, and hopefully he will take this and bring it with him to the Grand Slams, because he definitely deserves to go further than a quarterfinal.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, let's hope that, you know, stills him to get to a semifinal, because I think all of us would like to see that. But it's funny you say that about, you know, your similarities to FAA. I think I have the volatility of a Rublev, so I can understand like the gesturing and getting upset. But yeah, it does take winning a match like today and getting through a tournament like he did this week without losing really his shit. Like, he was really well behaved today. And yes, he's still gesturing, but that's going to be very hard to get under wraps. I know how that felt. I was the same way. But there's the difference between breaking a racket, losing your mind, and losing a game that can cost you the match. And that's not what he's doing, and he didn't do in this tournament. And to beat Alcaraz the way he did, and also to beat, you know, FAA today was pretty bloody impressive.
Well, I have to say, and then we'll move to the women. It's the last thing. I remember when I interviewed you in Charleston, I read this really interesting stat, and hopefully the same thing will happen to Carlos. I think you reached your first Grand Slam final super early on in doubles when you started playing, but then it took you like 3-4 years before you reached another one.
Yeah.
And then you won it. And then you kind of, the floodgates open and you want a bunch more. And it feels like you learned something. And once you had it, once you understood what was required for you to win a major tournament, the floodgates were open. And for Andre, hopefully this Madrid title will be similar in terms of, oh, if I keep my shit together, it's actually beneficial to my tennis.
It's beneficial. I will get the rewards that are deserved. That doesn't mean you're going to win every match. You may play a player that's just a little bit better on the day than you. But today, because he kept his shit together, and if he wasn't feeling great, he was physically better than FAA, who, as you said, had a couple of days off, really, essentially from the physicality. So that's a worry for me also with FAA, but maybe because he hasn't played this many matches in a row, even though he had a couple of days off, it's still the stress, it's still the taxing nature, and the third set was excellent. The third set was really, really good. So I want to give huge kudos. It was great. We got to just touch on Rafa. That was a beautiful moment on the court. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was like a really, really a goosebump moment. And he was already, I have to say, like just tennis-wise, he was already playing 5 levels better than in Barcelona. I'm not saying he's the Rafa that won 14 Grand Slams, 14 French Opens, excuse me. But that was a huge step ahead for him. In Barcelona, not that I was worried. We all knew he was still struggling, but you could see what he was struggling with. And now already you could see a big step ahead. Let's see how he performs in Rome. And then he has a few more weeks until Roland Garros. And, you know, you should never underestimate the champion like that. We did that multiple times. We underestimated Roger. He came back. And so, yeah, That was for me the most eminent thing to see, how quickly he improved from only a week ago in Barcelona.
Yeah, and Madrid's never been, even though I think he's won it four times or five times, it's never been a real great place for him to win, because you think about, he's won Monte Carlo and Barcelona and Rome and Paris, like literally double digits, right? Yeah. So Madrid's never, because it suits the bigger servers, the flatter ball hitters, blah, 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 blah. So anyway, it was great to see him back. Hopefully he can stay fit and healthy and get through these weeks and, you know, play well at the French Open, because that's where we want him to see him playing at his best. And also Novak, we'll see what the hell's going on with him leading into it. But let's get to the women, because the women's tournament was unreal. I want to touch upon some earlier matches, like before we get to the final. Can we talk about the Putintseva Rybakina match? Were you doing that match? Because
what
the fuck? Putintseva was like, how do we say her name? Putintseva, Putintseva?
I don't know. Putintseva. Yeah, I always
Julia.
Say Yulia, yeah.
Yulia. Okay, Yulia was literally had the match on her racket.
Yes.
And hit that great drop shot on match
yes.
point.
That was
and this is where I want to give kudos to Rybakina.
Yes.
That chick is, 6'2"? She moves so well for her size, and she has such great feel around the net, very similarly to Petra Kvitova when Kvitova used to come to the net and she'd look like, oh God, what's going to happen here? And boop, she'd hit this great angle, the most amazing angle off of that drop shot.
Yeah.
And Putintseva, you could see her just go, oh shit, that was it. And then we saw the Yulia that we all know, she lost her shit, and then it was over in like literally 5 minutes after that.
Well, Rybakina actually hit an ace, so it was 5-2. Yes. 15-40, and yep. then this drop shot, and I was sure it was not going to come back. And Rybakina is a good mover for her size, but she's not a good mover compared to the best movers on the WT.
Of course.
But she doesn't have to be. That's not her tennis. Her tennis is to, you know, suffocate you with all her incredible strokes. But she hustled, man. She hustled the whole match, honestly. I was so impressed by her, because she was not playing well. And I honestly thought she was going to win the tournament after that match. Because, you know, when you win a title, you always yeah. have that one match that you play really badly against someone you don't like playing. And she was down in the head-to-head 2-0. And then you get through and then the floodgates open and you just play your best tennis. So I honestly thought she was going to win the tournament after that, because she was so scrappy, so many unforced errors. But then, and that was, you know, and that's what something Sabalenka similarly has to her. But I want to say uniquely Rybakina has that when she connects, she is unplayable. You yeah. cannot get into the rally anymore. The reason why Putintseva was at that stage in the match that she was up 5-2 and 15-40 with two match points is because she somehow managed to extend the rallies, right? She would get the racket on, she would slice, she would dice, she would chop, she would, you know, puree.
Rainbow.
Moon balls, everything, you know, she would just manage to extend the rallies. And you could see Rybakina doesn't like playing Yulia. And so there were a lot of unforced errors. She managed to neutralize the serve. But once Yelena dialed in, she was unplayable. There were no rallies anymore. There is just yeah. no rally. It's just like, it doesn't matter whether it's Putintseva, you, me, Serena, Rafa, it feels like it just doesn't matter who's on the other side. Once she connects and you can go home.
Well, then let's flip to yes. talk about connecting, because then she is crushing Sabalenka.
Yes, exactly.
Crushing her. It was like, oh, this is going to be Brisbane again. And I'm sure that Sabalenka was like, oh, fuck, this is going to be Brisbane again, where she got crushed. What was it?
One and three.
Yeah, I mean, it was crazy. And she gets up a set and she's up a break against Sabalenka.
He was serving 5-4, right? In the 6-1, 5-4 serving for the match, I think.
She was up 4-3. I wrote a couple of things down because I wanted to not forget about it. But Rybakina at 4-3 is up a set and 4-3, 30 all, okay? And decides to serve and volley at 30 all to give her a game point to go up 5-3. Serves and volleys. Now, she is actually a very good volleyer. She has great feel.
Like, very she's good as a stretch.
Look, she's not me. She's not Mukova, right? But she's a decent volleyer. She doesn't miss a lot. Volley. Right? Yeah. She's a decent volley. When you hit a passing shot, you're like, oh, that's going to – she reaches out. She knows how to hit the volley in the court, not necessarily overplay it, blah, 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 all the stuff. I'm very impressed with her volleying skill, okay?
Yeah, and she this year I've seen her much more at the net and a much better transition to the net, I have to say. I think she's worked on that in the off season.
I wrote down, I love how much she likes to move forward. And yeah. I think it's really good. But my God, what the F were you thinking serving and volleying? Now, I know, okay, if she hits a soft return back, it's a sitter volley. Okay, all the scenarios. But that's not how you win, right? You win with a slower return. And then you go bang plus one, right? So that was, in my mind, it was a little bit of a brain fart. And then she lost her serve. Now she got up 5-4 again. Mm-hmm. But my point is, backtrack, you should have already won. Like, you should have already won that game probably. So anyway, she gets up 5-4 and then again has 30 all and has a sitter forehand. Sitter. Like, I mean, and there was no such thing as a sitter forehand for me because it was still a little dodgy. But for me, it was a sitter forehand, and she missed it wide and then lost the next point. And then all of a sudden, you could just see Sabalenka go, I can't lose this match now. Mm-hmm. Like, she has given me the opportunity to be back in this match. And she did. Sabalenka played so good after that miss and, like, crushed her to win that second set after those little misses. And then in the third, it was just – it was literally like the Australian Open final again. It was just serve, big shots, great play, unbelievable tennis, right down to the wire. And I like these two so much because they are great losers, both of them. I mean, they were talking at the net after the match. They were smiling. Like, Rybakina is one of the sweetest people on tour, without question. And Sabalenka, like, even if she'd lost that match, she would have been, like, nuts. But she would have smiled, she would have hugged. Same thing. They're both a credit to our sport.
Yeah. Yeah. And Rybakina, I have to say, she's very smart. Like, when I hear her in interviews, you can see she's smart. She's self-aware. She works through the things that happen. I think that's why she constantly gets better. And it's interesting, ever since she's won all those titles, the last few tournaments she's played in Stuttgart, she had a similar thing. It just didn't quite work out against Sabalenka in the end because she was playing as well. But a similar thing happened in Miami and Stuttgart for Rybakina. She wins the first set. She's up in the second. And then it's almost not like she gets tight, but almost as if she loses focus because she's so much better. And then she kind of fumbles the second set, locks back in the third. Maybe she gets tight. I don't know. You know, I don't know what's going on. But a bunch of times she was up a set and a break and it goes to a third. A set and a break and it goes to... It was the same against Sakkari. It was the same against, I don't know who did she... Garcia, I think. So every time she goes up a set and a break, you think this is a 2-3 match and then it goes to the third. But then she still wins the third set. And in Stuttgart, the same thing happened over and over again. So I don't know. Sometimes she just kind of loses that focus when she can finish it off into. Maybe she gets bored and she wants a little drama and spice up her life.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, listen, I think with the both of these two, it's such a roller coaster ride with Sabalenka and Rybakina. Like, both of them are so, like, can be so good, and then they can miss a few things. With Rybakina, for example, the forehand gets a little tight. There's no question about it. The biggest issue is she really has a hard time hitting the forehand down the line. Mm-hmm. Under pressure, she had a couple of opportunities, you know, on big points that she'd have the opening down the line and she'd miss that forehand. Or she'd go back cross court and then they'd get it back into the rally and all that sort of thing. So there's a couple of technical things with Rybakina that I would work on if I was her. And she's got, I would drill her 5,000 forehands and you can only hit the can down the line. Like just over and over. And what happens is, you start to change the swing pattern knowing what you have to do to make that shot, whatever it is. And it could be like Li Na always kind of tended to go forehand cross court because of the way that she took her backswing back. And Rybakina is a little bit similar. So I would be just focusing literally on hitting the forehand down the line only in practice all day until the cows come home, until she goes into a match and it's, you know, 5-all, 30-all on her serve, and someone hits her cross court, and she has the whole line open, and she feels like she can just go bang. And that's what Sabalenka does. Sabalenka goes wide with the serve and goes bang with the forehand down the line, and it's over. Same with Iga. Iga struggles with that forehand down the line a little bit too, but she's gotten really good at it as well. So there are small little things that I think Rybakina can get better at under pressure And that's one of them. But also, before we get to Sabalenka then getting to the final playing Iga, I want to discuss Coco and Madison Keys. Mm-hmm. And Maddie in particular had a great tournament, and I'm going to give her so many props because we're hard on Maddie. We were hard on her a couple of weeks ago, you know, because she just like, oh my God, some of the choices, the shot she chooses under pressure. But I want to give Maddie a lot of credit this week. She hung in there in some really big matches mm-hmm. where she was getting beaten. Like, but I want to discuss Coco because mm-hmm. we've talked about this. Everyone talks about the forehand. What the fuck, Petko? Again, the serve is killing her. She is double faulting outrageously on clay. And that is a no-no. What is going to happen when she goes on a hard court where the serve really, you know, the second serve on clay, when you hit a shitty second serve, it's not going to kill you that much.
Yeah.
But she is double faulting, like in double digits. And that's why she lost to Madison.
Mm-hmm. Well, so here's the thing that I will say with Coco. We talked about it plenty of times. We don't have to get into the technical stuff. I have thoughts about the ball toss. I think she should get it a little higher on the second serve. And she's now, you know, she's crushing. She has so much more power on it because she kind of brought it down and to the front. But I don't think she can get spin on. I mean, we talked about it. I don't have to repeat myself. I will say one thing that will maybe surprise you now. I watched Coco against Marta Kostyuk from first point to last. Coco Gauff is a fucking champion.
Oh, yeah.
I have never seen a mental strength like this. She was playing shit, absolute shit tennis. You can see she's not confident. Something's off in her feel. She's not feeling her shots. She was playing absolutely terrible tennis. And the moment it mattered the most, all of a sudden she didn't miss a forehand anymore. And I was with Jesse, my boyfriend, and I looked at him and I was like, this little girl, I mean, she's a teenager. She is the biggest champion I have ever seen. You know, when you've played tennis for so long, you know how it feels when you have these few weeks, sometimes months, in my case, years, when you just don't feel your tennis. You have every single tennis player. It can be Serena. It can be me. We have these weeks where just things are not clicking. You wanted too much, or you worked on a few things that didn't pay off and now you have to retract or whatever it is. But you have sometimes weeks where you just don't feel your tennis. You don't know how to win points. You don't know what makes you strong. And this is where Coco is at right now in this moment. And I think she's putting a lot of pressure on herself because everyone expects her to do well on clay, because that should be technically her best surface. But the way this girl plays when it matters most, I'm impressed. I wanted to talk about this. That was my main talking point when we wanted to talk last week after Stuttgart, but I got so busy we somehow didn't manage. So I'm glad we're doing it now. So this
is my, I want everybody to hear post- that because
yes.
I want everyone to hear that because when they bitch at me on my Instagram or
it was me.
Twitter,
it was me.
I'm like, guys, don't blame me. This is not about me. This is about my friend. Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
And between you
absolutely.
And Caitlin, who's busy, 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 and you're busy, busy, busy. And as much as I like the sound of my own voice, and everybody knows it, I get sick of myself after 5 minutes. Okay. So, you know, we need you. But listen,
but now you go into you're much better with the technique. But for me, it's the ball toss. I think they tinkered with the ball toss and now she can't quite get that kick on it anymore. But you are much better with technique. You should talk about that.
Listen, I think the ball toss is one thing. And there's no question, and we've talked about this. How are you going to hit a kick serve when your ball toss is at 1 p.m.? Okay. Mm-hmm. Which means it's in front of you and to the right. It needs to be behind you. It needs to be like, you know,
at least above you. At least above you.
Yes. At minimum above you. But there's a couple of things. She falls to her left and drags her left side of her body down every time she's hitting that serve. And a lot of that is the ball toss and where it's positioned. Mm-hmm. I think her grip is completely fucked up on her serve. Oh. I think she needs to get more of a continental grip like every other great server. And her elbow drops so low that when she – so if you imagine your elbow being so low and the ball's low, so imagine trying to hit a kick serve. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. So it's like you've got to get the elbow higher. I'm a big proponent on that. Everyone's heard that from me through the years. If you don't have a high ball – if you don't have a high elbow, you are only going to hit the serve to the middle of the court or to the forehand. And everyone that's a professional or a coach sees that. So we can all say, oh, well, it's going to go there every time. Mm-hmm. But she's falling down. She's 5'11", 5'10", 5'11". and she's making herself like 5 foot. So there are servers that have been like that in the past. It was something that Jeannie Bouchard struggled with as well. She would fall to her left. It was something that I worked on with her, for example. I was like, make yourself tall. Don't make yourself short.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And so there's a lot of things that need tinkering on the serve. I mean, the forehand is one thing, but on clay, it's not as big a deal. And we know that she can hit the forehand in. Yeah. My issue is she's giving away 12, 13 points a match, and particularly just out of curiosity, like at 5-all, I mean, I could go into many, many games in the match where it killed her with the double fault, but at 5-all, she double faulted to go down basically love 30. And then in the last game, like she double faulted like 3 times, I think it was, or she double faulted on match point. I mean, just so many double faults on huge moments where you are not allowing the best part of you to even get involved in the point, which is your movement, your champion spirit, your ability to be able to make the shots under pressure. But if you're not starting the point and you're giving the point away,
you can't
use any of that. So you've got to figure out a way to get your serve in the court, particularly on clay. And you've got to change a lot of it.
Question. Are we talking yips territory or are we talking temporary problem?
I don't think we're talking yips because it's technically a breakdown. Okay. That's her problem, right? So Billie Jean King always says,
that's a good sign for her.
Yeah. So Billie Jean King always says bad technique breaks down under pressure.
Yes.
And she has bad technique on her serve, particularly the second serve and the forehand to a degree. So under pressure, it's going to break down. So I see it in her face, and I love her so much, and she's such a great kid and such a great champion and all the stuff. But I see her face, like, just drop, like, I can't get a serve in. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, like, because you've got to change the technique. And if she changes the technique, everything's just going to flow for her because she has everything else. But you got to get the point started. And she's losing out on being able to hit her 120-mile-an-hour serve because she can't get it in the court. So anyway, that's the thing. But flip side of that, great effort, Maddie. I mean, she's down against Coco 5-3 in the first set, comes back, wins the set, eventually ends up winning the match. It was a very, very tight match. But then is down a 6-love, 2-love to Ons Jabeur and starts calming down. And when Maddie Keys hits the ball in the court, there is not many better tennis players than Maddie. And it's a matter of her just not panicking and not overplaying and not going for the dumb shot. And when she plays the right shot, she's so good. I mean, she got crushed against Iga because exposed her movement on clay. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference maker. But, Iga was crushing everybody until really.
Yeah.
I mean, she had the bad first set against Hadajmaya. Crushed everybody after that.
Yeah.
Except for the final.
Yeah. So I called the match between Maddie and Iga, and there
just started badly, kind of, and that's the problem
against these stuff. First of all, thank God Ons is playing well again. She looks much better. She looked much better in Madrid than she did the previous weeks. Maybe she's gotten her body under control again. But yeah, you're absolutely right. And Madrid should be like made for Madison Keys, right? This is the perfect tournament for her. It was cold all 2 weeks long, so you can't really get it out of her strike zone. Iga managed to do so a little bit with those heavy top spins, but generally speaking, it was between 12 and 16 degrees, so it was really cold in Madrid. They had the roof closed most of the time. Maddie with that serve, that was perfect conditions. And I will say it again, when I saw her at the, I think Bjorn Fratangelo, this is always spicy when you're in a relationship privately and the person is also your coach. It can be it can be tough. Yes, it can be like a fire pit, or how do you call something that can explode, right? It can be that, but he is doing some really great things with her tennis. I saw it at the US series. She played quarters in Washington and she was playing so much smarter from defensive position. She was having more margin. She was aiming through the middle and cross court rather than going for down the line shots. And then she got injured and kind of retracted a little bit to the old self. But I think now in Madrid, you saw again the work Bjorn has put in it. And I think he's doing a really tremendous job with her. And hopefully they can maintain because they seem to be doing really well in both on and off the court. And hopefully they can maintain that really healthy relationship in both regards, so her tennis can continue to grow.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy coaching your fiance and, you know, or your wife or husband when you're, you know, that close. And it is tough, but he's such a nice guy and Maddie's such a nice girl. So it's like, you know, they're managing it and it's not a challenger situation, right? You know, they're not fighting over two people. We're going to get into that at the very end for everybody. And if you didn't read Andrea's fantastic story in The Guardian, you must. But don't read it if you haven't seen the movie, because yes, it'll spoil it. Okay, so there. So I want to give Maddie a lot of kudos. Congrats to her on a great week. But let's talk about the final.
Fucking yes, hell. Finally.
Fucking hell. You did text me at 2-all and yes, you go, this match is unbelievable already. And it was. It was like the Australian Open final, where from the first point to the last point, it was unreal. And the match points even that Sabalenka had, I mean, Iga played them so well, like just crushed that backhand inside out. Crush that forehand to the open court. Like, fuck, are you kidding me? It was so good. All right, give me your thoughts.
Okay, I'm going to get into a lot of things. Let's try and keep it to 3 or 4 points minimum, right? Because otherwise this will explode.
Yeah, because we're doing this on Zoom and I'm going to run out of time.
First two things, the first 2 points I'm going to make is just to toot my own horn, because we all know I love to do it. Yes, I texted you at 2-all, this match is incredible, and I was right. And remember the last podcast when I said, I need these top players to play each other more often because those are the best matches. And the reason I said it was after the match Rybakina and Sakkari played, that was also incredible tennis. And now we saw it with Rybakina and Sabalenka, and again with Sabalenka and Świątek. It's not that we are lacking rivalries, it's just that they weren't playing each other. And now they are playing each other, and this is what happens. It's the most incredible tennis. And the thing is, why I say that, all of these girls are just a little bit ahead of the rest of the pack. That doesn't mean that people from the rest of the pack cannot beat them, but they have to have a great day. And somebody like Sabalenka, Świątek, Rybakina, they have to have a mediocre day, right? But if they play each other, they won't have mediocre days, because they will push each other to play even better than they already can. And that's what happened yesterday. And there were so many things. So this is just to toot my own
horn.
Wait,
before you get into that, it was interesting that you said that, because that was one of the things that Iga said in the post-match, in the trophy celebration. She said, thank you for making me a better player. Have made me a better player. So that is your point said right there by the actual player.
Yes. And then there were a few tactical things that were super interesting to me. So in the first set, Iga was really surprising Sabalenka, Arina, with a lot of body surfs. I think she won 70% of the when her first surf landed, and she almost entirely surfed body forehand. And so Arena really couldn't lean on the returns, right? And until she then got a little bit better used to it in the second, but that was her entire game plan for the first set. And interesting, Iga had 3 more winners than Arena did, even though during the points it looked like Arena was the one dominating the rallies, but it was actually Iga hitting more winners. And the way she was hitting a lot of winners was something I haven't seen of her yet against Arena. When she was in a defensive position or in a less than neutral position, she would hit through the middle of the court, right? Yes. Whereas yes. Iga, we know she normally likes, because she's such a great mover, she likes to defend in a manner that she can almost get back into offensive position. So if she's in the corner, she will go bam, cross court, or even sometimes down the line if she sees an opening. She was so disciplined yesterday in keeping her game plan intact from first point to last. And that was the most impressive thing to me from Iga's perspective, because we talked about her so many times. She's so good that sometimes she becomes stubborn and she just wants to push her game plan through without adjusting to her opponent. And that's why I think we need these rivalries, because she respects Arena. She knows if Arena plays well, she can beat Iga, and she will beat Iga. And so she needed to stick with the game plan. And I think she needs to do that more often, not because she won't win, but because she will have an easier time beating a lot of other players as well. And that was like, and another thing she did, which was super interesting to me, because Arena has one of the best forehand cross courts playing heavily, but Iga kept going into those cross court rallies, trying to out heavy her. And she, in the tiebreak, she missed 2 forehands that I actually really liked, because they were played with an intention. She missed them because she wanted to get a lot of rotation on them and get a lot of height above the ball, so they would jump out of Arena's strike zone. And she missed them, but then later when she made them at 5-all, she got the unforced error from Arina Sabalenka. So from a game plan-wise, tactical, I was so impressed with Iga. And boy, oh boy, is Arina Sabalenka a tough motherfucker. I was like constantly just dipping my head that I didn't wear. I was like, I can't believe how tough this girl is. She would miss it.
You were dipping your head, or you were tipping your hat?
Tipping my hat. The amount of fight and tenacity this girl has. Apart from the tennis, we all know that Arena can just overwhelm anybody, and not only outpower, but also you can see how much she has worked on her fitness. She's moving so well. She's a threat from the defense as well.
How many three set matches?
Yes.
They showed a stat that she was on court more this week than any tournament in her life.
Wow.
In her life, like Grand Slams, all of it. So, I mean, this is somebody who you know has put the work in. And Jim Courier, Andy Roddick after the match said that was one of the things that impressed him so much, was how both of them, down to the wire, looked like they could play 4 more hours. They're both so fit. They both put in the work. And I also tweeted out, this is why we don't need best of 5.
Yes.
Okay. It was 3 hours and 11 minutes of perfection tennis.
Yes.
We don't need fucking 2 more sets, because when everyone argues about this with me, I'm like, if you're down a break and you need to win 2 more sets, you just tank that set. You're just like, you sort of try. There's so many guys in best of 5 will tank a set, will tank games, because they're like, I don't want to give up more energy. But in best of 3, you can't afford to do that.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm always like, and I'm going to get haters, take best of 5. No, it's not about that. It's about the quality of tennis that you get when you have best of 3, because they cannot take a minute off the match.
Yes.
And we saw that yesterday. And frankly, we saw it today with the guys. Like, they were locked in for those 3 sets. Now, you know, Rublev may have tanked a little bit earlier in the set, or FAA may have said, oh, fuck, like, I'm physically getting a bit tired, I'm going to tank this set instead of, like, busting his ass to try and win the games. So, I mean, for me, it was such good tennis, and you are so spot on, because there was 1 or 2 points when it really came down to it where Iga got the ball back cross court, but in the middle of the court, So mm-hmm. through the middle of the court, I call it the tunnel. It's a very big thing for me and I coach it. Hit it through the tunnel, especially on clay. You're going to find a shitty bounce in the middle of the court there where everybody runs and all this sort of stuff. You might get a dodgy bounce, but I get it back. And then because Iga's such a great mover on clay, yeah. oh my God, she is so good on clay. Like she reminds me of Arantxa Sanchez and Steffi Graf and the great clay court movers where you know they can get a ball that not many can because they can slide to the shot. And her sliding ability on an open stance on her forehand and her backhand is outrageously crazy. Yeah. It's unbelievable. And it forces women to make the most impossible shot as a try and attempt to hit winners because of her ability to run the ball down. And that's where the errors came right when it mattered, including match point.
Match point. Yeah, exactly. That was exactly why Arena went for the corner instead of the middle of the court, but she tried to hit the tee, went a little long. And, you know, Madrid has a bit of altitude. So if you're not fully committed and you try to guide it, it goes right away. And it was such an incredible match. And I mean, the thing is, in the second set, the reason, so this is how close this match was. This is how high the quality was. Iga Świątek in the second set took a new string and missed two balls in the net in the beginning of the set because her string was a bit tighter. And that's why she lost the set. This is how fucking close this match was. Same with Arena. She missed one backhand down the line by like an inch. That's why she lost the match in the end because she missed the end. I have to say the one thing. She didn't, even though she got used to this in the second set, she got used to the body serves. When she got a bit tight, she missed a lot of those body serves. And in the tiebreak, she gave up, I think, two or three, even three returns that were like well-struck serves, but not winner serves. You know, she could have made it and at least gotten into the rally, but she missed those. And I think that was the tactic. That's why I was so impressed with Iga's game plan. Because she stuck with it, very disciplined from first point to last.
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's live by the sword, died by the sword with Arena, right? Because sometimes you're like, why would she go for that? That's so dumb. Like, pull back a little bit. And you're like, then she hits a winner in the here and then what about the second serve ace at 30 all?
Yes.
I mean, 5-4
or something.
Like, are you kidding me? Like, but you're sitting there
after
as a coach
she was
going,
down love 30. That's what I mean. Those were the moments, like the moments when she was down love 30, missed two crazy shots, and I'm like, oh, she's done for. And then she just goes ahead and hits three winners. I'm like, give both of these girls Oscars, Tennis Hall of Fames, whatever you have, just give them awards. Make an award up if you have to. But this is like, I was so mesmerized. I had the best 3 hours and 11 minutes. I was just like, just watching tennis at the played at the highest level of not only tennis, but athleticism, of game plan, of technique, of everything. And the audience, the atmosphere, I'm getting goosebumps from first point on when they saw, oh my God, this is a fucking slugfest. They were in it. They were so passionate. It was really, really fun.
Yeah, it was great. And, you know,
and also, sorry, and it also was a nice fuck you to the tournament after they fucked over the ladies last year. I'm sorry, I try not to swear so much, but this was a necessary swear in this moment.
Well, what people don't see in our podcast land is you also, on top of saying fuck, you actually are giving the bird. Okay, so you're giving me the middle finger. So you're not only giving the fuck to the tournament, but the middle finger to the tournament. So, and I agree with you because that women's final was literally one of the best, if not the best match of the year. And we've had some pretty good ones. So let's hope, Petco. It was interesting to hear both of them, though, after the match being like, oh my God, we've got to go to Rome and do this again.
Yes. What do you think about the two-week format?
I saw the little shake of the head for Iga, and it was almost like,
oh, she's not going, you think?
Maybe, I don't know if I'd go. And I have to be honest, I don't know if I would go if I was her. Mm. She knows there's no way she's losing first or second round at the French.
Yeah.
Like, she would have to have the worst day of her life and play the greatest, her opponent would have to play the greatest match of her life to beat her in the first or second round. It'd be like saying you're going to beat Serena at Wimbledon in the first or second round. It's not going to happen, right? Mm. Especially when she's playing well. And so physically, I don't know. I think it's just dependent because the thing is, as you know, Petco, very well at the French Open, when you get to the final, you know, quarter, semis and finals of the second week, you're fucking exhausted. Yeah. I mean, Rybakina has already said that she's tired already this year. And so, I mean,
well, she's played so much and she's won so much, Rybakina, no wonder. But you know what? I think what people underestimate who don't play tennis themselves and who haven't played tennis on the WTA or ATP tour, they think a day off is a day off. But if you're in the tournament, the tension in your body is still there. So Iga, Arina, Yelena, all these girls, when they play 14 days and they have 7 days off, those 7 days off, yes, they maybe just hit an hour of balls or maybe even 45 minutes, but the tension in their neck is still high. They are still thinking about the next day's match. They are still thinking about how am I going to play? Oh, what am I going to eat? How am I going to sleep so I can keep my routine, so I can do all the right things? What do I do for recovery? All these thoughts, all these emotions, they cost energy. So a 2-week event is a 2-week event. It's not a 7-day event. It's 2 weeks. And that's why Grand Slams are so taxing. It's not because you play so many matches. You play actually less matches than you do in a normal tournament, but the emotional toll is much higher. And you know much better than me how hard it is to keep the focus up for 2 weeks. For 1 week, anybody can pull themselves together, but to keep your focus for 2 weeks is a huge challenge. And now we're expecting these high profile athletes to do that 6 weeks in a row. I feel like that's a bit much.
That's a lot. Here's the thing, and this is what I always tell to people. When they win, they don't like go fired up. They lie on the ground and cry.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? It's because they're so fucking tired. Relieved and so tired and so taxed mentally, physically, yes. It's very physically taxing, as you know. But it's more the mental of every single point having to literally talk yourself off jumping off a bridge. Like you're constantly having to be like, okay, it's okay. Let it go. It's fine. You're going to be fine. Okay, let's get back to this point. All right. Okay, you missed that shot. Like Rybakina, when she missed that forehand to give her a match point, you could see in her face, oh my God.
Yeah.
And she lost that game and you could tell she was like, you could tell even on her face, and she's like the best poker player. But when you see someone play a lot and you know their demeanor, I could tell that she felt like the opportunity to win that match is gone. Now, there was so much more tennis that was played there and it could have gone either way in the end, but you could just tell she knew how big that miss was. And there's certain moments and certain points and certain shots that have been missed in the past where we could say that was the moment that the match changed. Even though it could go really close, you knew that that's where it changed. And she knew, and you could just tell by her demeanor, like, fuck. Oh,
yeah.
How did I miss that forehand, you know?
Yeah, so, and maybe in the end, the difference is not the backhand down the line that Arina misses on match point or the two or three returns she misses on the body serves. Maybe the difference in the end is that she played another crazy match against Rybakina the match before, and that cost her that 0.01% of emotional strain that in the end wasn't enough to beat the best player in the world right now, Iga Świątek, the number one player in the world.
And, you know, you saw Rublev today and Iga, both of them lie on the ground and start like crying because you can finally, I mean, I know what it felt like for me, for example, like when I won my Grand Slams, like I wasn't fired up. I like was crying because it was like, I could finally let the emotions that you've been, as you said, bottling up. You feel it in your neck. You feel it in your arms. You feel it in your, you don't sleep. You're not eating right.
Yeah, it's like you're not sleeping. Stuff. Exactly. All those things. You're not sleeping. Like after a match,
you're stressed.
Yes, you're not sleeping well after a match. Maybe you're sleeping. And then if you play early, you're not sleeping well before the match either because you're playing 11 a.m. So, you know, you have to get up at 7 and be in match mode right away. I know Svetlana Kuznetsova telling me that when she won the French Open against Dinara Safina in the final, she thought 2 days before the Roland Garros that she had torn an abdominal muscle. So she flew in her Russian doctor. He came in and he was like, girlfriend, you're having a nervous cramp. Go have a glass of wine. And after every match, she had a big glass of red wine so she could sleep because she couldn't sleep. Because remember that season she had won, I think, Stuttgart, Rome, and lost in the finals of Madrid. So everyone expected her to do well. And she had so much pressure on herself that she had to drink a huge glass of red wine so she could sleep at all. And she was like, I was not drinking much at that time. So when I had that one glass of red wine, it was like somebody hit me in the head and I fainted for the next 8 hours before I got up again to go and hit for an hour or so.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I remember that tournament very well because I was playing doubles with Sam and she lost to Svetlana 6-3 in the third in the semifinals.
Oh my God.
That was one of the best matches and it was like so good. But yeah, I mean, Sophia Kenin has famously talked about before she went onto the court, every single match at the Australian Open, the tournament she won, she cried.
Mm-hmm.
She cried before going on the court.
Yeah, yeah, well, so nervous. Yes, well, I wrote about it in my last Substack. I wrote about it, how to function under pressure. There is no secret to functioning under pressure. You just kind of have to do it and you get used to it. When I was a teenager and I started playing tournaments, I threw up before every match from nerves. I threw up every single match. And then later I didn't throw up anymore, but I still got the nausea feeling of like, oh my God, what is happening to me? Because I got so nervous. And every single player has that in one way or another. And every time, just go to a practice warm-up session of Novak Djokovic before a match. And this guy wins 99 out of 100 matches he plays. And he's yelling at his team members. He's throwing his racket. He's so nervous, so stressed out. And if he's nervous before a match, imagine how us other mortals feel.
Yeah, but also that's a really good point because I remember, you know, when Angie Kerber had to defend her Australian Open title and she won a pretty tough first round the next year and she was very stressed and you could tell. And, you know, Angie was notoriously got really stressed, but you could tell from her, right? Some people keep it under the vest pretty well, but Angie never did. And she came off the court. She was like, oh, and I interviewed her after the match. She was like, yeah, I was so nervous. Oh, God, you know, defending and and all this sort of stuff. And I happened to bump into Serena like 5 minutes later. And I saw Serena and I go, oh, did you see Angie? That was the tough one. She got through. She's like, she was so nervous that she goes, welcome to what my life has been like for 20 years.
Yeah. So even it's Serena. Like,
as you said, you do learn to deal with it. But the more you win, the more pressure. And it's so that's why we players as pros respect the shit out of these players that have done it for decades. At the highest levels, because we're like, man, they've had to deal with this stress and pressure so long. And the fact that 100%. They keep doing it. And the reason they are is because they keep, like you said, are working probably harder than everybody. They're putting that extra little thing in and they're putting themselves through the emotional tolls a little bit more. And someone like Andre Rublev, for example, is learning to keep his shit together and it is helping him win. You know, a Masters 1000 like he did today. So, you know, so anyway, credit to
hopefully
all of
it. So we will talk again. I'm deciding this for us after Rome and giving a little review of Rome and a preview towards Roland Garros. If you want, we can do a little Challengers movie review next week. I'm up for it. And what else did I want to say? I am now going to finish The Idea of You with a very hot actor on Amazon Prime.
Oh wow! Okay, well, thanks for that. And Amazon, if you want to pay for our podcast, we'd be all for it. But anyway, all right, guys. We're sorry we've been on a little bit of a sabbatical, but as we said, we've been some of us have been very busy.
We are now. I'm committed. I will be more disciplined. I swear.
Good. My discipline is out the window. I got home at 4:15 in the morning this morning.
Oh my God! How was it? Was Dua Lipa funny?
I went to SNL and watched Dua Lipa, I like to call her, because she played dual roles. She was the host and the wow. I mean, what an amazing, that's so hard to do. It's already panic stations to host SNL. It is a live TV show. It's crazy, the shit that's going on there. And she performed. She was awesome. And she was funny. Nice. And her American accents in all of her skits were awesome.
Nice.
I loved so many of the skits last night. They were so funny. The penne a la vodka. You didn't see it because you're not here. You're in Germany. But the penne a la vodka one was hilarious.
Okay.
So I want to thank my friend Jill Bream, who took us because she works on the show.
We love Jill. Caitlin.
I went with Caitlin from our intrepid Caitlin Thompson. And I went with Daniela Kalmeyer, my buddy, who's a great clothes designer. And we had a great time. And I got home very late, but I had fun. But anyway, Petco, thanks for joining me today. Everyone, thanks for hanging in there with us. We love you and we'll be back. We'll see you next week. Okay, because you're in Germany, Petco, we're going to say cheers.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.